Good morning and welcome to the 31st briefing on COVID-19 offered by Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito on behalf of the Baker Polito administration and hosted on the platform by the MMA. I'm Jeff Beckwith, MMA's executive director. There is just so much going on in terms of dealing with COVID from so many different angles. We want to first express deep appreciation to all of the leadership of cities and towns all throughout the state, and also express appreciation to Lieutenant Governor and all of the members of the administration for working as closely as possible with local leaders and making lots of decisions, some of which are very challenging. And we're going to delve into those, I'm sure, this morning. Thank you for joining us at our slightly different time for this briefing. For the agenda, we'll first hear from Lieutenant Governor, then have a very brief update on finances from the finance team that's joined this briefing presentation. And then we'll go to questions, and members of the administration led by the Lieutenant Governor and her key staff will be fielding those questions for all of you. So Lieutenant Governor Polito, thank you so much for being here and for all of the work that you do and so many issues with our cities and towns. It's a pleasure to see you.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeff, to the whole team at MMA, to your executive board and to the members. Just one more big thanks from Governor Baker and from our team. We are so blessed to have such a strong and dedicated and hardworking public service at the local level. You've been awesome every step of the way. Number 31, it's who's keeping track, but you are, and I'm glad that you are. It just puts things in perspective. It's almost a year coming on the state of emergency date, and it's hard to believe for all of us. But let's keep going. We work well together. Yes, there's different parts of this process that none of us could have anticipated, but we need to continue to have an open dialogue, listen to one another, and make the best decisions with the information that we have available. We have the team with us today. Heath will talk in a few minutes. We have Dr. Larry Madoff here for a little bit of time with us this morning. And Jana will be joining us soon. And of course, Sean Cronin is our utility player. And anything that we can't answer, we'll just send it off to Sean and be able to get us on the right path. Let me just start with some positive points. As we all know, we are a top tester in the country. We are now at 15 million tests conducted. That's very important for us to be able to continue to monitor the status of the virus, where it is, and what it's doing in our communities across the Commonwealth. We're now down to 66 communities that are in that red zone, but marginally, with very low numbers compared to where you were just a short time ago. The overall positivity rate is 1.9%, hasn't been this low since, you know, the early fall time period. That's excellent. And that's a real credit to everyone doing their part. So we are grateful. Just a couple of other stats to put into place where we stand here in the Commonwealth compared to other states. We're a very competitive bunch here in the Commonwealth, and we like to be on top. So if we have to work a little harder to get there, we do. In fact, we're number one for total doses administered per capita among the 24 states with a population over 5 million, which are states like ours. That's good. We want to keep that going. We've also administered a total of 1,443,848 doses of vaccine as of yesterday's daily report. And that includes over a million first doses and about 400 second doses. And we have, with your great help, provided the first dose of vaccine to 272,000 individuals over the age of 75, which is a little over 50% of that population. Since February 1st, that's when we activated that over 75 population. And that's a really good effort. As of yesterday, 85.5% of total doses which have been shipped to the Commonwealth have been reported as administered in MIIS. So that's a B, right? We're going to keep working hard and see if we can get that number up, obviously, even higher. And 95% of the Massachusetts population lives within a 45-minute drive of a mass vaccine or 30-minute drive of a regional collaborative. We now have 7 of these mass vac sites and over 105 pharmacies offering vaccine. So a lot of sites, a lot of places, a lot of access, but not enough doses, right? So we talk about all of this effort, but we still know we are not receiving enough in order to accelerate the pace of dosing people in our Commonwealth. Although there is some good news that we received on Friday relative to that number, and we will be receiving more doses, this slightly more, I think closer to 139,000 doses a week, and on top of that was 110, it's now 139,000. Last week, we were able to send our, National Guard to help us. You know, the National Guard are always there when we call, right? And there was a disruption last week due to weather in other places of the country, which would have put 135 vaccine doses at risk to arriving here on time. Due to that mission, we were able to secure those doses and keep everything on track. So those are some positive, obviously, developments. Let me address the time when we activated the 65 plus and people with two medical conditions, activating another almost million people into the eligibility category for vaccinations. That came as good news, representing progress as we roll through phase one and into phase two. But at the same time, there was an unacceptable performance when the gate opened for the website and people to book their vaccine appointment last Thursday morning. That was obviously not acceptable. PrepMod recognized that, even though they've been doing this kind of work in 27 other states, the pressure test that they did was not sufficient to prepare for that moment. And that left a lot of people, our shared constituents, especially older people who've been waiting to book their appointment, something they've attached hope to every single day this year once we opened the program, and to not have it work for them was obviously very frustrating for them and for all of us. We are obviously working very hard to update that process, both the making sure that it's reliable for when people go to access it to book their appointments, and knowing that Thursday we get more appointments to book, that has to work. And that the functionality also is something easier for them to navigate. So on both functionality and reliability, a lot of work is being done relative to the website. Having said that, despite that, that day, last Thursday, all 60,000 appointments were able to be booked. So that was important. And there was no disruption in terms of people's showing up for appointments and getting the vaccine that they scheduled for. So that's very important as well. On February 17th, Secretary Sutters sent a letter to all your boards of health. And I'll just run through this quickly because I know you are very familiar with the announcements we made last week. And so regarding the local boards of health continued partnership, we have asked you to, again, keep tackling the issues around vaccine hesitancy and using all of our communications tools to reach out to members of your community, especially in high needs areas. Obviously, you're doing surveys and inventories of your homebound and residents living in your public and private low and affordable senior housing. That's really important that the inventory and the survey is being done so that you can begin to determine how much vaccine you will need or we can help you with reaching out to that population to make sure that they get their vaccine. In addition to the local boards of health effort for these targeted measures in your communities, we also know that we have a whole big state here. We have 7 mass vac sites. We have over 100 retail pharmacies. We have 50 CHCs delivering a vaccine in certain places and urban settings in our Commonwealth. And then there are gaps. And that's where we've asked you to also work with us directly with DPH to determine where those gaps are and how to pivot some of your clinics into regional collaborations so that we can scale up your local effort into a regional effort to literally fill those gaps where they exist on the geographic map of our Commonwealth. We talked about reliability, we talked about systems functioning. We also need to make sure that people have access to the vaccine, no matter where they live and no matter what their ability is to move about. And that's where the siting of these places is critically important. You will hear more today in our announcements around the approved regional collaboratives. There are 11 at the current time that are approved, and Jana Ferguson and her team are evaluating 3 or 4 others that have already submitted the details of their plan to DPH. And then there is a process for evaluating other gaps that you as local officials see in your area and think that you have the ability to stage up to the requirements for a regional collaborative and to be able to have that conversation with DPH to evaluate whether that makes sense both for your region and for DPH to be able to supply the collaborative with the doses to have a sustainable operation there. So obviously the criteria include vaccinating minimally 750 individuals per day, 5 days per week, serve an unmet need geographically, we just discussed that, have an administration rate threshold of 85% and report doses within 24 hours. That's really important, right? We have such a constrained supply and we have such a valuable, precious resource in a vaccine. We need to make sure we do not have unused vaccine at the end of the day. And we need to make sure that when we get it from the feds, that we turn it into a system that can put a shot literally into the arm of a resident of our Commonwealth as quickly and efficiently as possible, and to be reporting that back through the MIAS system. That keeps us all, that's the scoreboard, right? That's what we all need to look at. I think that's what I wanted to talk about there. Obviously, equity, our whole plan was designed around fortifying the front healthcare system in phase one, equity and efficiency and places, congregate care, and all the places where people are more confined. We continue to incorporate equity as a key principle of our vaccination rollout and plan in the Commonwealth. That's why we have specific DPH liaisons to 20 disproportionately impacted communities so that the correct plan can be designed for reaching the hard to meet individuals within certain communities. And there are 20 of them. I don't need to list them here, but we can talk through what it means to be a disproportionately impacted community and what the DPH community liaison will be doing with those communities to meet the needs there. Last week, we also added asthma to one of the eligible medical conditions. That is also something that we made an adjustment around for equity and for environmental justice reasons. And we felt that was an important update to make to our list of medical conditions that make someone eligible to be receiving a vaccine at this time. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Jana Oh, no, no, I'm going to turn it over to Heath. Did we say that? Okay, I'll turn it over to Heath to do a quick rundown on the finance and address any questions you might have, and then we'll turn it over to DPH.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Thanks for Jeff and everybody at MMA for having us on. Wanted to do three quick updates related to federal finance, the role that that's playing in the response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Point number one is related to the Coronavirus Relief Fund municipal program, obviously the funds that were made available through the Commonwealth to help support unanticipated costs associated with the pandemic. We have been running, we're calling our reconciliation period that was originally, you know, that had a couple of different deadlines at this point. Last week, we released updated guidance for municipalities extending that that deadline through the end of the fiscal year, June 30th, 2021. That does two things. One, it aligns the reconciliation period with the end of the fiscal year, as I said, and then two, gives us the opportunity to reevaluate where we are in the program once further federal COVID relief legislation passes. So June 30th, 2021 as the new deadline for your CVRF municipal program applications. That's point one. Point two, want to highlight some important changes that are being made to the FEMA public assistance program. FEMA PA is a big part of the federal response to the pandemic for state, for the Commonwealth and for local governments. You know, as you know, the municipal program, the Coronavirus Relief Fund municipal program, was designed as a complement to FEMA PA in a lot of ways. And there are some pretty significant changes happening at FEMA PA that, that people should be aware of. Number one, the reimbursement rate. The president signed an executive order about a month ago now that increased the reimbursement rate for the disaster from 75% to 100%. So full reimbursement from FEMA for eligible expenses. Point two, the federal government has clarified that the that 100% reimbursement rate applies to the entire disaster. So all the way back to January 20th, 2020 through September 30th, 2021, the entire duration of the disaster is covered at the 100% rate by FEMA. And then third, and I think there's still more definition and guidance to come from the federal government here, but I think this is potentially the big one. The president's executive order highlights an expanded definition of eligible costs that can be submitted for FEMA reimbursement related to PPE, related to cleaning and sanitation, and perhaps the big one related to school reopening costs. We are still waiting for further guidance from FEMA about their definition for what we covered as school reopening costs in particular. But I highlight that for people because I think it is very likely that FEMA PA will become a much larger, will play a much larger role in supporting COVID-related costs as we go forward. So rate change, clarification of the duration applies to the whole duration, to the entire event, and then still awaiting further guidance on eligible costs, but it seems likely that that definition of eligible costs is going to expand in a way that will require municipalities to go back and look at costs that they've incurred over the last year, because some of the things that you thought were ineligible before are likely to be eligible now for FEMA PA. Third thing I want to highlight, wrapping up, is that there is another federal COVID relief package working its way through the United States Congress at this point. Passed the House Budget Committee yesterday. I expect that by Friday or Saturday, it will pass the full House. The bill includes significant new resources for the Commonwealth and for local governments across the Commonwealth. The estimate, the preliminary estimate put out by the House Committee on Oversight, that was responsible for that section of the bill estimated that in Massachusetts, that'd be worth about $2.3 billion mm-hmm. in additional assistance for municipalities, directly for municipalities, in addition to amounts that would be available to the Commonwealth. So I think there's still obviously a lot of work left to happen at the federal level on that bill, but it is, it's important, I think, for people to be aware of the fact that there is activity at the federal level that may flow through to municipalities in a way that has a pretty material impact on your planning and on your efforts to respond to the pandemic. So with that, I will turn it back to Jeff. I'm not sure who's next, quite frankly.
Hey, I think we'll, Lieutenant Governor, unless Jana has some further announcements or you have anything else, then we can just start to dive into questions, which I think are overwhelmingly going to be about vaccines. Just want to say thank you to Heath and the finance team for all of the work here. The federal aid in the American Recovery Plan could be a real game changer for Massachusetts at all levels. And so the MMA is working closely with the National League of Cities on that. Also, I want to note to all of our municipal leaders who have always appreciated Dr. Larry Madoff's participation in these briefings. He has a conflict and will have to leave at 12 o'clock. And so that's if you see his screen disappear, it's only because he had a pre-existing commitment because of the time change of this briefing has provided the conflict. But Lieutenant Governor or Jana, do you have any further overview on vaccines before we start to go into questions?
Jana, you might want to just give an update. I mean, last Friday, you spent some time with the Boards of Health going through the guidance for senior housing and homebound. Just maybe give an update about where you're at now, and then obviously open it up for questions.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you so much for time. So we went, as the Lieutenant Governor just mentioned, I have calls with the local health departments on Tuesdays and Fridays. And on Friday, we went through a lot of material about the roles for municipalities, in particularly for vaccinating really vulnerable residents in both senior housing and homebound individuals. So the Lieutenant Governor also already mentioned that low income and affordable senior housing is eligible to be vaccinated right now. There is a lot of outreach that has been going on, or there has been a lot of outreach, both with local health departments and also with the housing agencies. In particular, there were over 900 different low-income and affordable housing structures, I guess, for lack of a better term. Not all of them affiliated with housing agencies. So in your community, you might have public or private low-income and affordable senior housing. They're all eligible to be vaccinated at this time. So we've been trying to partner those housers with clinical partners that can provide vaccine and working with those vaccine providers then to schedule out vaccine allocations to make sure that those residents and staff who are in those facilities can also be vaccinated. So that's not limited to the age group. Some of those individuals are under the age of 65, but the fact that they live in low income and affordable senior housing at this time makes them eligible. So we're working with them. We're continuing to support that work, and the individuals in elder housing, elder affairs have been really closely trying to partner. So if you have low income and affordable senior housing in your community and they still need partners to provide vaccine, this is a great opportunity to help either matchmake them with a clinical partner such as a community health center or a pharmacy, or with your local health department who may be able to provide vaccine, or else that, you know, we can try to make sure that they also have the supports on our end in order to do that work. So there have been quite a few presentations on that, and we're happy to share more information on senior housing in particular. In addition, we went over in a very more high level way, the approach that we think municipalities could play, particularly to vaccinate homebound individuals. We know that really municipalities understand their vulnerable populations. They have perhaps through previous emergency preparedness plans, already really good insight into individuals in your community that may be homebound and need extra assistance, particularly if there were some sort of emergency where there was a power outage or something, you may have already awareness of them. But we're also creating an intake process that local health departments can use if really kind of looking at the possibility of three approaches, but all kind of all tied into a similar process. So one would be if the municipality wanted to take this on individually, we're building out a process about that. There's a statewide vendor that is will do the same thing for municipalities that don't have the capacity to do the homebound vaccination programs. Then there's also an opportunity for there to be a partnership with the local health department or Council on Aging and the statewide vendor as a provider. So we're really going to be talking about that a little bit more on this week with local health departments. And then hoping next week, we're really going to be able to roll out like a more guidance, more like a toolkit, really so help people understand what their options are and how to tap into that information so you can make good decisions about how to go forward in your municipality to serve these very, very vulnerable individuals and make sure that they can be vaccinated when they're eligible. So, we started that last week. We'll continue to do that this week. And of course, we continue to have more information available, but the homebound one in particular, we're really building out. So you'll have good guidance on how to do that work. And it is, a uniform screening tool, for example. I mean, really trying to get pretty granular there for people. It's kind of the primary information we went on over the weekend, or excuse me, last week. I would like also to talk a little bit about the regional collaborations that the Lieutenant Governor mentioned. There is a process. We are looking primarily at geographic areas where there is not already ready access to another vaccine opportunity. There are the regional collaborations the Lieutenant Governor mentioned. There are a few others who are kind of in consideration given the just the proximity to a vaccine in the area. I have a form that really kind of gets into just the information about staffing plans, traffic plans, location, the lead community, need some information around that, recognizing there is this need to build up to 750 a day minimally, 5 days a week, although vaccine availability does not yet match that. So we're still dealing with very constrained vaccine supply. So we're kind of planning for capacity, but not guaranteeing that is readily available yet. And then that can get sent in a Google form. I can send out the link. And then there's also an email address. I can give you the email address now. We put together an email that would be relatively easy to remember. It's municipal.vaccine@mass.gov. You can also send information to that email address, municipal.vaccine@mass.gov, and submit. That'll be the place to send, information, questions about the regional plans or applications for the regional planning collaborations. We will probably be going through things. We've received some requests that, right now, given the circumstances, we may need to put people on a wait list until more vaccine becomes available. But this will be the right email address for that. It's also going to be the right email address for putting in information about the homebound vaccine planning. And it's not the senior housing one. That one, that's already been in process for like a month. But this will be a one-stop place for the other vaccine work that might be done in the municipality. So I'm going to also talk about this later on this afternoon with the local health departments, but this is the email address to be sending information.
Thank you very much. Jana and Lieutenant Governor, we do have a lot of questions. We'll work to get through them as best we can. Maybe we'll start at the big picture ones and then get down a little more focused, because I think some obviously touch on or are an extension of what you've already talked about. The first question we have, it gets to this issue of the decision to really focus around high volume sites, the mass vac sites, or setting up supplemental regional sites with high capacity as the model. Now, I know hindsight is much better than current time, and I think there is certainly a lot of frustration on the part of the local officials who have set up their municipal clinics to now see that there's a change in role and they're being phased out. So I think a further explanation about why that decision has been made, and then obviously if there are gaps in areas that how communities can be a part of the process on the regional sites, we'll take that a little bit later on. But can we just revisit again why most communities were not offering municipal clinics, but a lot were. And so what was the pivot point that led you to that decision and the reason why? And this is an extension of the conversation you started last week when you outlined that, or 2 weeks ago at the briefing, you talked about this as an eventual model. It just, I think, happened faster than our members were thinking.
Okay. Well, we can back up a little bit and talk about the plan in Massachusetts. We were different than other states. We set up a unique plan that was based on preserving life, fortifying the frontline healthcare system and emergency responders, and making sure that people that didn't congregate care from shelters to houses of correction to group homes received the vaccination and personal care attendants in non-COVID facing employees within the healthcare, system at large. That was all phase one. It seems like a long time ago, but your local boards of health, a lot of them, not all of them, we have 351 cities and towns. We had about 108, I think, local efforts that might've been local, maybe over a few municipalities or an individual municipality, helping us with administering the first doses to first responders. That was really important as part of phase one. Targeted a segment of the population by job description. Phase two, we then entered into a age-based expansion of eligibility, starting with the over 75 population on February 1st. And some, but not all, of those initial clinics that were set up for first responders continued to provide vaccine for that population, but not everyone did. And at the same time that we were asking for you to help, we needed to set up more infrastructure, knowing that we're going deeper into our phased-in approach, and we'll get to employee bases as well as the general population, where we need to be administering millions of doses. We have close to 5 million people in Massachusetts to vaccinate that are eligible over 18, and that's going to take us a lot more capacity and a lot more doses. So when we started out, I forget where we were, Jana, but we were maybe at 80,000 doses a week, maybe something less than that. But we've always been short on supply, and everyone recognizes that. So the pivot is now that we're moving into these larger groupings of people. And while we have to determine, have we penetrated the eligible people enough to then open up more? And that's sort of a balancing equation that we need to evaluate. And as I said earlier, we're at 51% of over 75s received their first dose, and some of those might be on second doses too. And we felt that we should move forward with the over 65 population and people with two medical conditions. That's a lot more people to add into the eligibility cohort. That's another million people. So we have to get through this million people. Now, not 100% of it, but make a significant dent into this population before we get into the next phases, which do include teachers, more municipal employees, and others. And as we have are going forward in our plan, we need to set up capacity that will be able to expand and flex as we need to get more people into the system. And with the idea that perhaps not too long from now, we have another vaccine being manufactured in the J&J vaccine that might not require the deep freeze and refrigeration protocol and a second dose. So we need to be ready for all of that. And so we have a variety of ways that people can access vaccine. Based upon what the command center has researched and what has happened in other states around throughput and efficiency, mass vaccination sites do that. They can accept large volumes through an appointment system with a socially distanced platform, literally, that can process a lot of people. That's people that have access to that, that are mobile, that can get rides. And we even made that adjustment with the buddy system to try to get more people to those sites. And for some people that worked. We also have a separate program that the federal government is running with retail pharmacies. So we've talked about the doses that the Commonwealth gets. We're at about 130,000 doses a week now. The federal government ships separate doses to the CVS and Walgreens program. And they are setting up over 100 retail pharmacy sites across Massachusetts as well. So you've got the mass vac sites, mobile people, book an appointment, go. They run long days, leave on the weekends, they're open. Retail sites, that's your corner, you know, Main Street location, it's familiar to people. And then there's the stuff in between. And that's where, as we move into these larger categories, the local clinics are good, but they're small, right? There's 100 doses, 200 doses, maybe 400 doses. And we want to use and reserve that kind of effort for the targeted measures, you know, and that's why we've asked you, because you know your communities the best, how to reach your homebound, how to reach your senior housing. Those are people that aren't going to go to a mass vac site, right? They're not as mobile, they're not going to go there. So we needed to help craft a program in a lot of places where we can go to them, meet the need where it's at, and help have you as local officials use your expertise to reach that population if you're equipped to do that. And the other way to scale it for people that don't feel going to a mass vac site is for them, for whatever the reason is, or they might not have a retail pharmacy, that these regional collaboratives can also fill those gaps. So it's a set of municipalities working together. And, you know, speaking with all of you, we've talked a lot about regionalization for other initiatives that make sense. It's more of an economies of scale, but it's still feels local because it's not too far from you. You'd have a lead community, use the FEMA resources to set up these regional collaboratives for staffing, for the physical assets that are needed, and reach that 750 a day, 5 days a week. With the proper partner in the right location, there's no question that these regional collaboratives will provide local access within an area that either a mass vac site or a retail pharmacy isn't available. And the CHCs, of course, are also receiving doses in order to get vaccine into hard-to-reach neighborhoods where there's vaccine hesitancy and there's more of a communication program needed in order to get people comfortable to come into those facilities. That's the overall strategy, is to be able to scale up to meet the massive demand in terms of the population that we have in front of us that has yet to be vaccinated, and to be able to scale up quickly when more vaccine literally rains on our Commonwealth, and we can't wait for that to occur. So I just want to emphasize, though, how important your local boards of health and your municipal effort are. And I want to further emphasize that DPH has a certain job to do. They have to be efficient. They can't waste doses. They have to be accountable. They have to report into the system. And we hold them accountable in terms of that administration rate, right? But they also don't see what you see within your communities and in your regions. And that's why I am stressed with Jaina and her team, come up with a process that's collaborative so that you can hear from the locals what they think the gap is, and they can understand from you what you have available to you for doses and just resource allocation to be able to meet their need. So this isn't a perfect process. This process evolves, but I really hope that through the regional collaboratives, we can have sort of the hybrid of sort of a local experience, but on a scaled up basis to be able to help people that find, you know, 45 miles or 30 miles too far and need to go someplace closer. Again, we have a limited supply. And as Jaina was saying, we're gonna be able to scale these up at a time when the vaccine comes up and be as proactive in that process as possible, not knowing what we're getting from the feds week to week. I mean, we wish that we had a longer runway from the federal government that you're going to get X number of doses each week for the next 3 weeks. That would give us all a level of certainty for administering this vaccine. But at this time, we are constrained by supply, and we're constrained by the week to week cadence that the federal government has built into their system.
And Lieutenant Governor, thank you for that overview, which I think is very insightful and helpful for our members to understand the decision-making process and how communities can fit in. And of course, part of the issue is that we have communities of varying capacities, right, in terms of local resources, size, staffing, and the ability to ramp up. So we have some communities that would be able to meet the 750 a day, 85%, but other communities that don't have that ability. And so right now it feels like a trying to drive a really heavy truck and find that the clutch point, right? To shift gears and go into a process going forward. And sometimes there's a lot of friction that develops during that, but it's a process we know you're committed to.
I think the Google form and this dedicated email will be helpful.
Yes.
If you want to get into the details of that more, we can do that now if you'd like.
Excellent. We know that the calls that that your administration is having with the local boards of health to share this information and provide multiple ways that communities can connect and choose the model that works best on the homebound, on the senior, housing. And then going forward, just to raise an issue that's raised by a number of these questions, and people seconding the questions, just would ask that that the administration consider as we look at expanding. We have to get through the million people who've been added, but as you go to the next phase, there are so many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of municipal employees who are providing critical functions, and communities are saying, please let us use our capacity to be able to set up local clinics because it's so much more efficient from a management perspective in terms of running the community. So we hope that's something we've communicated this with you earlier, that you consider as we progress through, because we think that we're talking about maximum efficiency, this is a role that many communities would be able to play very effectively. I do see some questions about these regional clinics and the process. And if you could talk a little bit more about how communities will be learning about the criteria and getting some visibility into where the gaps are and being able to communicate about that, that would be very helpful.
Jen, I'll turn that over to you. And I don't know if there is a map that's being developed that will show the locations of these regional clinics and maybe an overlay that shows where the retail pharmacies are and the mass vac sites so that people can see. I'm a visual person. I like to see it on the map and then kind of figure out where the gaps are from there. But maybe, Jane, you can speak a little bit more to that.
Right. I think actually that is being developed. By the command center, there is a more information coming out tomorrow. I don't know for sure whether or not a map is part of this, but I can check into that. The way that we're looking at it right now, in terms of the criteria and some of this has been mentioned, in addition to having the 750 a day, being able to have capacity to vaccinate 750 a day, 5 days a week. It also needs to be a static clinic site because this has to be on the map for anybody to sign up for. So while they're located in an area, all of these sites will be serving the entire Commonwealth so that, you know, anybody can really get vaccinated at any location. There have been jurisdictional boundaries around particular vaccination sites, but these regional collaborations are also required to be open for everybody. So they basically become, you know, open clinics, perhaps located near you, and certainly local marketing could be done around those, but the vaccine appointments themselves are open to everybody. So there's a need to have at least static clinic sites. So we have some organizations, like I know there's some stuff in the chat about Barnstable County. Barnstable County has been a regional collaboration since the first responder clinic started. I work very closely with Barnstable County Health and Environment on this work. I have been talking about ramping up that capacity. I know there's a new initiative around partnering with clinical partners in that. Something comparable is happened also in Berkshire County. These are very great models where there are really good partnerships locally with clinical partners, with other organizations. And perhaps there can even be like a, for lack of a better term, like a hub and spokes model where there'll be like, you know, there needs to be a lead agency. There have to be static sites, but it doesn't have to be just one site. Sometimes there could be multiple sites. In Barnstable County, for example, there are currently three. I know they're adding another. Berkshire County has multiple sites. Franklin County has multiple sites. Again, these are won't be just for Barnstable County, but there are multiple locations in order for there to be, you know, opportunities for people to get vaccinated along the Cape. So these are great models.
On that collaborative of the Cape, for instance, you have CHCs, Cape Cod Hospital, and then the county public health system.
Yep.
Does the allocation go to one of those, or does each one get the allocation and distribute? How is that organized?
Well, so to date, it has, you know, been really a little bit more disjointed, but going forward, ideally there's one lead. In some cases, like for example, Berkshire County has partnered with their medical system and the County Public Health Alliance is actually ordering for everybody, right? So they're ordering for the hospital and they're working out in their kind of hub and spokes model. It's not required that there be one lead agency for all the clinical partners in an area. But if they want to partner together like that, that's ideal. Then it's kind of easier to understand what the allocation is going out to the area. But that's actually very ground level decision making. So Barnstable County and Berkshire County have decided to go that approach. In other areas, it's multiple municipalities joining together with like one lead municipality, but they aren't necessarily ordering on behalf of their clinical partners as well. So there are different, you know, models for that, but the objectives are really around making sure that it's open to everybody, having capacity to be vaccinated, you know, at an efficient kind of high throughput site, and then you know, and make sure that we, you know, are using our allocations correctly, that the administration rate is 85%, like all the other providers need to be, all those things that you kind of walk through. So those are not new expectations for the providers. It's just the capacity issue and really wanting to use these locations to supplement the existing vaccination sites that are already in Massachusetts to kind of plug some gaps where there really does not appear to be other vaccine opportunities, either through pharmacies or hospitals or mass vaccination sites, for example.
Thank you. I know that there are a number of other questions regarding the dealing with the homebound and you're looking at multiple options for communities. If you could talk a little bit more to give clarity. And then also that you are developing even more information for municipalities to understand these various options and how they fit in and your communication of that. But if you could do a deeper dive on that, that would be very helpful.
Well, I'd say it's still in draft. I mean, I have to kind of take it high level right now. Some of the details are being worked through, but we plan to roll those out pretty quickly. So, you know, I would like to be able to share more, but yeah, I'd rather just like pause on that. So when we do share it, it's accurate and we have the information. I can tell you that our expectation is we'll have the state vendor. There will be a way for people to identify through the state vendor if the municipality isn't going to be doing this, you know, themselves. We'll have a similar screening tool for municipalities to use so we can really identify those who are homebound kind of in a very consistent way. And then we'll set up, it's really, again, you know, the health department or the municipality can, you know, make a decision about how they want to go forward. If they aren't capable of doing that work in their own municipality resources, you know, for whatever reason, the state system is available. And then there is a way really to partner with that mobile vendor, because perhaps the issue is just you don't have a vaccinating provider in the community. That's the very high level gist of it. I promise you we'll roll it out relatively quickly. And then there will be a couple of weeks really for people to make decisions about how they want to proceed. Even if you have a list of people who are already identified as homebound, you can still use this vendor system. If you don't have the ability to vaccinate locally, we'll just figure out a way to transfer that information to them.
Thank you. And then sort of related, you referenced that in terms of scheduling out, obviously with a constrained vaccine supply, needing to coordinate all of these and provide some level of, if not guaranteed, an idea to communities and when they'd be able to get vaccine for these purposes. There was a comment, a question in the chat regarding working on senior housing. And saying that the community had put in a request because they were ready to go, but then it had been told that there wasn't vaccine available for this coming week. So could you talk a little bit about that process that you're envisioning, just because there are so many matchmaking parts, but you also have to deal with the allocation of vaccine?
Right. Yes, absolutely. So the I'll use the vernacular that's being used for the with the housing agencies. And the phrasing is housers, right? So the Elder Affairs is using this term housers. There's a survey the housers can fill out to identify who the partners are that they want to work with in order to provide vaccine. Some communities, that's the health department. There are other providers, of course, but let's take the municipal health departments, for example. In addition to having the housers identify that they're going to be working closely with the municipalities, they also provide kind of a population number. So we understand how much vaccine is needed for that particular facility or those facilities. So the command center has a sense of like how many people are in an area and how much vaccine is needed in order to vaccinate those residences to include staff and people who are living there. Because there's we've been explaining this both the housers and also the health departments for about a month now. There is still the allocation limits each month or each week, excuse me. So one of the things we have been communicating is you may be ready to go, we may not have the vaccine available to do all of the requests that we get that particular week. And we may ask you to wait a week or maybe 2 weeks because they're trying to manage out all of the people who have indicated that they're ready, how much vaccine is needed to vaccinate all the people who are ready, and then to kind of manage that across the channel. So there are about, I mentioned this over 970 different housing facilities, addresses where there are people living. So there's a lot to manage, and that process will probably take some time. Vaccine is ordered weekly. If you haven't had an opportunity to get vaccine yet for a particular community that or a particular houser that you have ordered vaccine for, please order vaccine for it again the next week. You're not out of the ability to do this work. It's just being pushed forward. And the woman who's been running this, her name is Emily Cooper. She has just been excellent at communicating with the health department and with the housing agency about delays in that and why those delays might be there, and asking them to schedule out another time. So if you have questions, please check in, because there's a really good chance that there's a, you know, it's just been asked to be moved to a next week or something like that. And there are circumstances where a municipality has not been able to order a vaccine because they have not met the administration rate. There's a question about whether or not the data that we have are accurate about the doses. Please let us know. There's a vaccine management unit. We can help clear through what you think might be errors. But that has, you know, affected some communities' ability to order a vaccine. So we want to make sure that we have accurate information from you. We want to help you clear through any kind of errors that you might have. And we want to make sure that you can get vaccine for your seniors.
Thank you. I know we're coming close to the end here. Just a reminder to everyone out there that we do save the chat and provide all of those questions to the administration for follow-up and input into their decision-making process. So your comments are provided directly to the governor's office and to DPH. And so we, and Lieutenant Governor's office, obviously, that's the governor's office. So I just want you to know that if we don't get to your specific question within the next few minutes, it still is being shared with the administration. Part of the issue too is that communities are raising concerns that the population at this stage is a harder to get population, the 75 and older, the 65 and older, and that over time, as younger, sort of presumably healthier people who are more mobile are added into the mix, then it makes sense for these large sites to continue to just plow through and be really effective, hopefully with an increased supply of vaccine. Just a concern that these regional sites still be, as you set them up and as you give them commitments of vaccine, that they are continuing in operation, because there's all this work being put in place by so many communities to make this investment and to come together and form collaborations that didn't pre-exist the pandemic.
Yeah, I think that's our vision for that. That it is definitely a network of vaccine opportunities across the Commonwealth.
And a final question, because I think that this gets to real questions about the pharmacy role and how much vaccine is coming in Massachusetts. In that, if there's information that could be provided to just put in that Massachusetts getting 139,000 doses. There are a lot of questions in the chat. How many doses are the pharmacies getting? Is this separate from that count? And are pharmacies suddenly coming to us and saying they can put in place clinics? And how do communities really understand whether or not the connection with the pharmacy is, you know, there to stay? And how is that really supplementing vaccine availability in regions?
Okay. The CVS and Walgreens have a program with the federal government. Remember, they were helpful at the beginning for long-term care, and then obviously pivoted to their retail locations to activate for doses delivered. They decide where they're going to set up a retail site within their systems. the CVS and Walgreens. We can suggest to them that we have ideas for them to consider, but it is their call on what they activate. We did include CVS locations in our Vax Finder program. So when you go on the website and you put your geographic location in, the CVS locations will also appear as an option. So that was helpful. Walgreens did not participate in that effort with us at this time. Maybe they'll change. I don't know. I think there could be some small number of local non-chain pharmacies that are also participating, Jana. I don't know the process and how to activate those in your community.
I wonder actually if it's possible for me to bring information to this, either send it out afterward or bring it to a next site. I really don't have as much information about that work.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, and as a reminder, the MMA will be posting an audio recording of this briefing on our website, along with a summary article of the discussion and the answers. And obviously, as more information is provided by the administration, we'll update on a rolling basis. I do know that we've now run the hour, and Lieutenant Governor, I know that you have a commitment for an announcement later on or soon. So I'll give you an opportunity to have some final words, but first want to thank you for not only the 31st briefing, but for taking all of these questions, providing answers as best you can, and continuing to work as full partners with cities and towns. We appreciate your leadership very, very much. Lieutenant Governor?
Okay, thank you all very much. There's a lot of information here. I've been reviewing the chat and you provided us with some additional feedback and we appreciate that. You can see that we try hard to make this process accessible. I wanna thank Jana for setting up that email, municipal.vaccine@mass.gov, as well as the Google form. For communities that are thinking about a way to address a geographical gap and they want to present their ideas to you, that you will listen and you will review it and have that conversation with them. I think that's really important. And we've got a lot of people that are eligible to get vaccinated. So whether they're homebound or they're in a senior residency or they are mobile and can get out, we need to really work hard. The faster we get through 65 plus people with two medical conditions and the eligible individuals from phase one, the faster we can get to the next cohort, which include teachers and more municipal employees. So let's just continue to work smart together. Let's knock on wood that more vaccine is coming our way and more maybe new manufactured vaccine from J&J. And I just want to say thank you. Keep up your great, great efforts. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, very much. And we look forward to seeing you at this briefing again on March 9th, two Tuesdays from now. We'll resume, we hope, at our normal 1 o'clock time. So please keep that for all of you out there. Keep that in your calendars. In the meantime, there'll be lots more questions, lots more developments, and lots more information shared from the administration in this, as we heard today. So, Lieutenant Governor, thank you. Jana, thank you so much. Heath and Sean, uncharacteristically, didn't have to say a word here today. So, thank you all very much. We look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks. Take good care. Be safe.